There's soil for you in all its glory as the crucible of terrestrial life. And now we ask, what is the role of soils in climate change? Can you all hear me? Good. So, the terrestrial domain covers some 30% of the globe's surface, and soils cover some 85% of the globe's terrestrial domain, of which agricultural soils, that is cropland and pastures, constitute some 37%. Agriculture is a very important industry, even though not very many people are engaged in it directly in the so-called developing countries. It contributes a considerable, some 24% of the gross domestic product, and it employs overall, worldwide, some 1.3 billion people. And it feeds all of us. Let's not forget that. Cropland has expanded considerably, some 8% since 1960, mainly in the developing countries, and it's projected to further increase by some 35%, especially in South America and in sub-Saharan Africa. Agricultural soils emit to the atmosphere significant amounts of greenhouse gases. Those are carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide. Depending on how they're treated, how they're cultivated, and the water regime is an extremely important determinant of the oxidation that takes place in the soil. And of course, fertilization and organic matter transformations in the soil have much to do with the fate of nitrogen in the soil and the possible emission of nitrous oxide, which is a very potent greenhouse gas. As I said, agricultural operations result indirectly in the emission of additional greenhouse gases, tillage, fertilizers, pesticides, all these inputs, plus transportation of goods to the field and from the field, and then, of course, the processing of agricultural produce. Altogether, agricultural emissions of greenhouse gases have increased from 1990 to the year 2005 by some 14%, and the mechanisms are very complex and heterogeneous, but need to be analyzed and considered in detail. The trends are that population growth and rising living standards and changing diets and increasing demand, all are likely to result in higher intensity of agricultural production, expanded agriculture, and higher emissions of greenhouse gases from agriculture. Improved agricultural practices, this is the important message, offer possibilities to mitigate the greenhouse gas emissions by management of such as precision tillage, which minimizes the energy applied in the operation, as well as decreases the manipulation of the soil that hastens the decomposition of organic matter. The management of crop residues and nutrients, the use of slow-release nutrients, conservation of soil, the restoration of degraded land, and the efficiency of water use. That's a very, very important aspect of improved agricultural management in irrigation and drainage, crop breeding and selection for better varieties, and the inclusion of legumes and other soil-enriching crops in the rotation, the use of cover crops, agroforestry, livestock grazing, manure utilization, an entire complex of operations, no simple panacea, no single panacea, a package of treatments designed specifically with this in mind, the enrichment of the soil and the sequestration within the soil, the stable sequestration of organic matter. The efficiency of all operations needs to be improved, that is to say, to reduce fuel use and the production of alternative energy sources other than those based on including biofuels of various kinds, such that will not add to the net emission of carbon, carbon dioxide, methane, and of course, secondarily, nitrous oxide. So we need a new paradigm of greenhouse gas conscious and greenhouse gas efficient farming. And we're all working on that. Included within this paradigm is the principle of conservation tillage and even zero tillage, reduced energy consumption, increased soil carbon storage, and we have a problem of weed control and how to effectively control weeds when we have tried to avoid cultivation, mechanical cultivation, and increasing the productivity. By so doing, we can relieve the pressure on marginal land and stop this insidious process of deforestation, and we need to maintain ecosystem biodiversity, not only for the purpose of carbon management, but also for the purposes of maintaining the integrity of the earth, the community of life of which we are members. All this entails increase the use of energy in irrigation, fertilization, pesticides, transportation. That's the flip side. There are the pluses and the minuses, and increased livestock emissions are also something that needs to be looked at. It's not only the soil in agriculture, but also animals through their enteric fermentation and emission of methane. So the mass balance between emissions and absorptions of greenhouse gases, that is uncertain, highly geographically variable. It involves numerous trade-offs. It is not a simple thing, but that's why it calls for research and application and the best minds and the best efforts of soil scientists and agronomists. Now, virgin soils contain stocks of soil organic matter accumulated over many centuries. Cultivation, as you know, accelerates the decomposition and the emission of greenhouse gases. Crop removal without replenishment causes net soil organic content losses. Erosion removes the carbon-enriched topsoil, and the consequent degradation of soil quality induces expansion of agriculture and intensified production application of inputs that again affect the balance of carbon. Hence the importance of soil quality restoration by carbon sequestration, which improves soil fertility and structure and stability. Now, some of the benefits of carbon absorption and sequestration will diminish over time. The potential soil organic carbon sequestration is finite. We can refill the soil's reservoir of carbon, but we cannot, in most cases, and in practice, do it indefinitely. So there seems to be some kind of equilibrium in many, many soils when they are vegetated. At best, that is the equilibrium, or nearly at best, it's the equilibrium that was extant in the virgin soils. Soil carbon sequestration equilibrium, or soil carbon content equilibrium, may be attained in several decades. Higher soil temperatures, which are the consequence of global warming, may inhibit carbon sequestration by accelerating decomposition and emission. Nonetheless, some of the benefits of the measures that I mentioned before can continue indefinitely, such as the reduction of fuel use due to better efficiency of operations, the production of energy crops, but those energy crops have to be chosen so that the net effect is positive. And that's not always the case, as we all know, in some of the biofuels that may cost more carbon, in which the carbon balance may be negative rather than positive, or hardly positive. And soil improvements, that is, the improving the fertility, the erosion control, the stability of soil structure, all these can continue indefinitely. So we need to develop effective policies to reward carbon efficient practices. Farmers are more likely to adopt carbon efficient practices if they're given tangible economic incentives and guidance. Guidance can come from us. Policies should come from governments, both local, state, national, and international. And we need to develop effective monitoring methods and mechanisms for sampling and for remote sensing so that we have the data. And the data is very spotty right now. I said that. I want to show you something about erosion. And I'm rushing through because I'm only given 15 minutes. Some of the benefits diminish in time. We must remember that once we begin a program of carbon sequestration, we have to continue it because the carbon in the soil is labile and we can easily lose it by reverting to a carbon inefficient set of operations or cropping sequence. Now, this is a map showing how complex the soils of the world are and how dangerous it is to generalize. I'll give just two examples in the little bit of time I have available. Take on the one hand the tropical soils, the humid tropics, profusion of natural vegetation there once that natural vegetation is removed, as in the rainforests of South America, Central Africa, Southeast Asia. The soil is quickly depleted of organic matter because of the high moisture content and the high temperature, and so the soil loses its carbon content and becomes non-productive and requires intensive management, intensive applications of fertilizer to compensate for that loss. These are soils that require special attention, and perhaps not enough attention is given to the proper management of soils in the humid tropics. On the other hand, the other extreme are the soils of the high latitudes. These are the cryosols of the northern Eurasian landmass and the northern North America landmass. And these soils are at present largely frozen. With climate change kicking in, these soils are going to thaw out. We can predict that the organic matter in them, as long as the soil is thawed but still wet, will emit methane. As the soil drains naturally, it will begin to emit carbon dioxide because these soils contain enormous quantities of stored carbon in the form of organic matter, undecomposed organic matter. And then, sometime later, as the climate warms further, if it does, these areas are going to be invaded by grasses, shrubs, trees, and a process of re-sequestration will begin. We don't know what the sequence of events is likely to be in time, whether it will take years or decades or a century or more. We need to study, to focus on these carbon-rich soils that are likely to undergo changes because the process of climate change is going to be preferential in the higher latitudes. And here is a table that I cannot discuss in detail now, but you see where the carbon is concentrated. It's concentrated in a number of soil orders or soil types, and these require special attention. And with that, I rest my case. Okay, we have time.
We have time for one question.
The question is how to sequester carbon in soils, and the answer is with you.
Go ahead and ask a question.
Well, I was going to ask. It seems to me that. Desires and luxuries in order to
That is one of the questions that cannot be answered from this podium. We need to work on it. And one factor that will affect the behavior and the preference of people in the regions that you mentioned is how we in the developed world behave. We have set a terrible example to the rest of the world by our profligacy, by the way we waste and burn and slash and live in these air-conditioned, energy-intensive habitats that we've built for ourselves, and then the roads that we drive and the vehicles that we drive and all that. We have to change our ways as well and set better examples for the rest of the world.